So, mindful self-compassion. So, to get a feel for it, I'm going to lead us through a very brief, like 5-minute meditation that will bring in the elements of mindful self-compassion. We'll begin that way. So, once again, just as you were just doing, sit in a comfortable position. Let your eyes close partially or fully. And in your mind's eye, finding your own body in the room. And perhaps offering yourself a sense of welcome. Greeting yourself with an inner smile. And for this practice, incline your awareness toward yourself as you might toward a dear friend. That sense of affection and care. And now dropping your awareness into your body. And feeling the sensations in your body right now. And you may notice that different sensations may have different feeling tones. Are there any pleasant sensations? If so, can you take a moment to appreciate and savor them? Places in your body that feel easeful or comfortable. And are there any unpleasant sensations? And if so, can you make some space for them, allowing them to be there, if only for this one moment? Remembering that you are not alone, that uneasiness and discomfort is a part of the human condition. And if there is discomfort, can you let your heart soften a little? Be a little tender. Simply because this is so. Or maybe offer yourself some words of encouragement, like, it's okay, you can handle this. And finally, appreciating the effort and the good intentions that brought you here, already an act of compassion or self-compassion. Now ring the bell. And Gently opening your eyes. So we just practiced the three components of self-compassion. And those three components are mindfulness. We pay spacious attention to what we're experiencing and seeing what's arising in the present moment. So mindfulness. Common humanity, remembering that we're not alone. And self-kindness, offering ourselves some warmth or encouragement. This is a quote from Rumi. Close your eyes, fall in love, stay there. This is actually quite a bit easier said than done. When we spend some time in mindfulness and look inside, we often feel or see things that we don't love. It's very common. So how do we stay there? How do we stay present with the difficult? And the answer is self-compassion. Compassion is the capacity to be with the suffering, with suffering, with an open heart. So we delve into a little bit more around this idea, this inquiry about what exactly is self-compassion. And I can just ask you again to go inward with this question. So reflect for a moment on a time or various times when you've had a close friend who was suffering in some way. Not a partner or a family member, they're sometimes too close, but a friend you really cared about who was struggling. For example, maybe your friend had a misfortune or failed or felt inadequate. How do you typically respond to your friends in such situations? What do you say? What tone do you use? How is your posture? What nonverbal gestures do you use? And now, think about various times when you were suffering in some way. Had a misfortune, failed, or felt inadequate. How do you typically respond to yourself in these situations? What do you say to yourself? What tone of voice do you use? What's your posture and your nonverbal gestures? What are they like? As you reflect on these two different scenarios, do you notice any differences? So, an informal definition of mindful self-compassion can be treating ourselves with the same kindness as we would treat a friend when things go wrong. And treating ourselves as we'd like others, friends or family, to treat us. We need to treat ourselves that way. So again, mindful self-compassion has these three components, and I want to go into them a little bit more deeply here now. So the first would be self-kindness as opposed to self-judgment. So we practice self-kindness rather than self-judgment. And treating ourselves with kindness and care and understanding and support, like we would treat a good friend, as we mentioned. Most people treat themselves more harshly, saying cruel things to themselves that they would never say to someone else. So if that came up for you in that last reflection, know that you're with a majority of people. Compassion includes the wish and effort to alleviate suffering. So there's an action component to self-compassion. It involves actively comforting, protecting, and supporting ourselves when we're in pain. So that's self-kindness rather than self-judgment. Then the second aspect of mindful self-compassion is common humanity versus isolation. Seeing our imperfections as part of the larger human experience, and also recognizing that everyone suffers. Reminding our minds that we're not alone or chronically unique with anything that we're struggling with. When we struggle or fail, we often feel that something's gone wrong, that this shouldn't be happening. And this creates a feeling of abnormality, like I'm wrong or I can't do life, or those kinds of internal voices, which lead to shame and isolation. Common humanity, again, connects us, reminds us that the struggle's real for everyone. So there's self-kindness rather than self-judgment. There's common humanity rather than isolation. And then the third aspect of mindful self-compassion is mindfulness rather than over-identification on the one hand, or denial on the other hand. So mindfulness means knowing that we're having a difficult time or we're suffering in some way when it's happening. So this is a prerequisite for compassion to arise. We need to be aware that it's going on. Mindfulness allows us to turn toward painful feelings and be with them as they are. Mindfulness is a balanced state of awareness. We don't suppress or avoid what we're feeling, nor are we carried away by the dramatic storyline of what's happening, which is referred to as over-identification. So we don't allow the mind to go off into its ruminative stories and thoughts endlessly over our struggles. We re-inhabit the present moment again and again with mindfulness. So we're that middle road of not in denial, not over-identifying with our struggle. So those are the three components, again, of mindful self-compassion. So this, what I'm sharing with you tonight, comes from this work of Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer. And they both have done a huge amount of work since they started working together in 2010. In terms of both generating and gathering scientific data on mindful self-compassion. And that's really great because there's a lot of cultural conditioning around not trusting the whole notion of self-compassion, or misgivings about self-compassion. And so I want to bring that up now as we're continuing to explore what it is and how it might apply to us. So lots of people have doubts about self-compassion that prevent them from practicing it. You might be having some doubts right now as you're hearing me talk about this, or know people who do. And generally speaking, and this is where the science comes in really handy, Our doubts and misgivings about self-compassion come from innocently acquired misconceptions about it. And so I'm going to share some of these and then the research that refutes it. And you can see for yourself if these were any of the doubts that or in the ballpark of any of the doubts that may be arising for you or maybe arise for people you know. So one belief around self-compassion is that it's a form of self-pity. But self-compassion reminds us that everyone suffers, that's the common humanity part, and doesn't exaggerate the extent of the suffering, the mindfulness part. So it's really not a woe is me attitude. Research shows that self-compassionate people are more likely to engage in perspective taking rather than focusing on their own distress. And they're also less likely to ruminate on how bad things are. So it's actually not, it's a resilience practice rather than a self-pity practice. It shores us up when we're authentically suffering or struggling in some way, but it doesn't feed the complaining mind. So another very common misconception about self-compassion is that it's weak. I've heard this also about the practice of forgiveness, that it's understood to be weak, when actually it takes a fair amount of strength to practice compassion or forgiveness. Self-compassion is a strength that offers resilience when faced with difficulty. Research shows self-compassionate people are better able to cope with tough situations like divorce, trauma, chronic illness, or chronic pain. So some of the biggies, those are all separate studies. Compassion is a practice, whether we're implying it inward or outward, compassion is a practice of courage. Another belief that's really common in mainstream Western culture is that self-compassion is selfish. It's not service-oriented, it's self-absorbed. But by including oneself in the circle of compassion, our sense of separation from others is lessened. So we actually are just saying, yeah, me too. I too am part of humanity, and I hit up against pain. Research shows self-compassionate people tend to be more caring and supportive in interpersonal relationships, less jealous, are more likely to compromise in relationship conflicts, and are more compassionate toward others. Related is the notion that self-compassion is self-indulgent, privileged, better things to do. Compassion wants long-term health, not short-term pleasure. So just in the same way that a good parent would get their kid to eat vegetables and not let them eat only ice cream for dinner, self-compassion also has the long-term well-being of the practitioner in mind. So self-compassionate people engage in healthier behaviors like exercise, eating well, drinking less, and going to the doctor more regularly. There's just a couple more. Kristen F. and Christopher Germer have heard it all because they are global with these teachings, and people bring these up regularly because there's so many misconceptions. So another is that self-compassion is a form of making excuses. Self-compassion provides the safety needed to admit mistakes rather than needing to blame someone else for them. Research shows self-compassionate people take greater personal responsibility for their actions and are more likely to apologize if they've offended someone. And then lastly, and this is a big one for Westerners, there's the belief that self-compassion will undermine motivation. So much of the motivation that we learn externally growing up can be harsh. You know, I can remember, for example, a really kind of intense, scary and militaristic PE teacher, you know, those kinds of sort of cliche, but somewhat ubiquitous figures in our lives growing up who motivate us with the fear tactics and the intensity. And that we internalize that. And there's this whole belief in our culture about spare the rod, spoil the child. And so there's a fear, a genuine concern that if I'm not tough on myself and if I'm using self-compassion, I'll just lay on the couch all day. Fortunately, that's not the case. And the research shows that. Most people believe that self-criticism is an effective motivator, but it actually undermines self-confidence and leads to fear of failure. Motivation with self-compassion comes from the desire for health and well-being. It provides the emotionally supportive environment needed for change. Research shows self-compassionate people are no less likely to have high personal standards. They just don't beat themselves up when they fail. This means they're less afraid of failure, more likely to try again and to persist in their efforts after failing. If you're interested, there's quite a bit more research. Overall, what the research is sharing is that self-compassion authentically promotes well-being. And this is what the Buddha taught. The Buddha's teaching was we need two essential elements on the path to freedom from suffering, on the path to deep ease and well-being. And one of them is the clarity to see what's happening. We need to see what's happening in this life rather than being run by our default mode network, our automatic brain. We need to see what's happening in the present moment so we can respond skillfully. We need wisdom and mindfulness. But then the other really huge energy we need to learn to tune into ever more is the energy of compassion. The Buddhist teaching was this is the road to well-being, and that's what the science is bearing out. If you're interested in this research, you can go to Kristen Neff's website, selfcompassion.org. She has a whole huge collection there of the most up-to-date research organized by category. So if you're just curious about the relationship between, say, self-compassion and self-esteem, you can see the research on that, or self-compassion and healing eating disorders or whatever. There's just a lot there. Overall, what the research shows is that self-compassion is strongly associated with fewer negative states like depression, anxiety, stress, and shame, negative body image, and strongly linked to more positive states like happiness, life satisfaction, and optimism. And it's also linked to better physical health. Okay, so I'd like to lead us in a couple of practices. So this is the thing. This is one of the things that I love about Buddhism, and we find it here in mindful self-compassion as well, is that it's not just didactic. Like you just heard me talk for a half an hour, and thank you for your kind attention with that. But really, it comes down to direct experience. And we have our direct experiences with these teachings through practice. we practice here in this Sangha, and we're all encouraged to practice on our own as well. And so I'm going to take us through two practices that you can take home with you after tonight if you don't already know them. So the first one is about soothing touch. So all mammals, humans included, there are two signals of care, and one of them is safe and supportive touch. And so we can practice with soothing touch as a way to begin to cultivate this energy of mindful self-compassion. The other one, just so you know, and we'll be working with this more in a moment, is tone of voice. Tone. When we use harsh tones, either externally or internally towards ourselves, we activate the fight, flight, and freeze the limbic system. With harsh tones, we can activate that in animals too. It's, you know, they feel it, they respond to it. And then the opposite is also true. When we use calm and gentle tones of voice, we activate the mammalian caregiving system, release oxytocin or a feel-good chemical into the body, and move the nervous system into rest and digest. So what I want to do with this touch exercise is just move us through some different possibilities. And as we're moving through these and trying them on, you can see if any of them resonate as feeling supportive to you. And they may not. And if they don't, that's totally okay, of course. If none of this resonates for you right now, you can reflect on what do you do, what can you do, and what do you do to soothe and support yourself. And that could be like patting your dog, or a hot shower, or sitting in the sun, or drinking a cup of warm tea, or whatever. There's a lot of different things we can do to bring this sense of soothing. But for many of us, soothing or supportive touch can really be a helpful tool to add to our kit of practices. So let's try some. All right, so if you like, you can close your eyes partially or fully to connect with your inner experience. And begin by pressing your palms gently against one another. And just bringing your mindfulness there to your palms. And noticing how that feels for you. And then try one hand cupped in the other. Again, bringing mindfulness to that, see if it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. We're scanning for pleasant. Trying two hands over the heart. And cupping one hand over a fist over the heart. This is a move in Aikido that stands for strength. Putting one hand over the heart. And you can try moving the hand back and forth there at the chest or in small circles. One hand over the heart, and one on the belly. Two hands on the belly. And one hand on a cheek. This one hand on a cheek is a practice that James did for 3 years. And cradling one's face in the hands. Crossing one's arms and giving a gentle hug. This one is a stealth one you can do, like while you're standing in line or something. Gently stroking your arms. And cupping the hands in one's lap. Now just take another minute to explore supportive touch on your own. Just trying out the ones you thought might have worked. All right, wonderful. So now we're going to move into one more practice. And just to say that what I offered you tonight was just the beginning of a very deep, deep and wide practice. There are 6 week classes and 8 week classes, and this would be a small part of the first class that I'm sharing with you tonight. And so if this particular, you know, series of practices speaks to you, that's something that you can learn more about, again, at that same website, selfcompassion.org. I also teach this stuff and will be teaching another round of it in the fall. And I'll make announcements about that later. But there's lots of teachers offering it at all different times. So something that's out there. Okay, so but one more practice for tonight. So this is called the self-compassion break, and we're going to do it in a guided and meditative way, but ultimately it's something you can do in just a few moments in daily life. It's a practice that you can pull up and use in a moment of stress, but we'll move through it slowly so that it can, you know, kind of log into more long-term memory. All right. So you can close your eyes or bring your gaze downward if you like. And we're going to deliberately bring up a mild to moderate challenge in your life right now, because as we said earlier, for self-compassion to be meaningful, it needs to be meeting some kind of stress or difficulty. So think of a situation in your life that's difficult in the mild to moderate range, causing you stress, but not a huge problem. because we don't want to overwhelm ourselves when we're first learning the skill of self-compassion. So it could be a health problem or a problem in a relationship, a work problem. See if you can invoke something challenging. And allow yourself to see and hear and feel your way into the problem to the extent that you experience some uneasiness in your body. Where do you feel it the most? See if you can make contact with the discomfort that you feel in your body. Then say to yourself slowly and clearly, this is a moment of suffering. And that's mindfulness. That's the first of the three components. Other options include, this hurts. Or, ouch. Or, this does not feel good. Naming. Next, say to yourself again, slowly and clearly, suffering is a part of living. That's common humanity. Other options include, I'm not alone, or me too, or others in my community would feel a lot like me in this situation. Now, put your hands over your heart or wherever it feels supportive, feeling the warmth of your hands. And say to yourself, may I be kind to myself? May I give myself what I need? That's self-kindness. May I be kind to myself? May I give myself what I need? If you're finding it difficult to offer yourself kindness, imagine that a dear friend or loved one is having the same problem as you. What would you say to this person heart to heart without giving advice? And see if you can offer that same message to yourself. And if that's hard right now, it's okay. Just feel into the warmth of your hand. Holding yourself in a general sense of care. All right, I'll ring the bell. All right, so that is a little orientation to mindful self-compassion. I'm interested to know your thoughts about it, anything from tonight, including that last exercise, what you noticed with that or anything else. So if you have anything to share in terms of your experience or ask, reflect on or comment, I'm sure we would all benefit from whatever you're thinking. So I encourage you to raise your hand. How was that self-compassion break for you? Did you notice anything with the first phrases about, oh, you know, this is a moment of suffering, or the second phrases about me too, I'm not alone, suffering is a part of life, or the third phrases about, may I hold myself in kindness? Barbara. And then Zach.
I really got a lot out of the practice just by the feeling of doing it with others. And I don't even know who all the others are. I mean, I'm new to this. So it was wonderful. And I thought it was particularly interesting. Often when I'm doing my own meditation, I have a hard time getting my mind to calm down. And I put my hands together like this. I just call it Hushu hands, a Japanese name. And I notice that it calms me, but I had never connected it with what you just did. So I thought that was pretty interesting because—
Oh, that's wonderful.
It is wonderful. And what I noticed for myself is that it's very hard for me to okay doing something like that. So something about the way you presented, actually maybe several things, helps me to feel like we can adopt these things without feeling, I don't know what it is, maybe slightly shameful or silly.
Yeah.
Or like we need too much comfort in life and we should do what you mentioned earlier, which is be hard with ourselves and get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, I had a very classical British education and there was nothing really very comforting about it.
Yeah.
So I've learned to be harsh with myself. So this is a wonderful opportunity. And I have made some notes. So I just wanted to thank you so much for that.
Oh, you're welcome. And yes, how wonderful. Your own wisdom had already led you, you know, there. And that these teachings just affirm what your wisdom already knew.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
Just trust ourselves more.
Yes, exactly.
Just trust ourselves. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you, Barbara. Zach.
You know, it always strikes me when this topic comes up that it's kind of the inverse of the golden rule of treat other people how you want to be, treat other people how you want to be treated. It's sort of treat yourself how you want others, or how you want to treat others.
Yes, totally. Yeah,
it's
really true. Yeah, thanks for that. It is ironic, and yet it's like that energy of care travels in all directions. Like we have the golden rule as our example, but it works the other way just as well. Yeah, that's cool. Thank you.
Right, and we often, I think, treat others with a lot more understanding and respect than we do ourselves. I mean, I suppose it depends on who you are, but that's how I am.
Yeah, that's how a lot of people are. one of the research documents from that huge list that's out there, people were, some huge swath of people were somehow studied or quizzed or something. I'm not quite sure how the work itself went, but it worked out to something like 87% of people surveyed were more compassionate with others than they were for themselves. But then there's that 13%, you know, that's already, you know, more compassionate with themselves than they are with others. But the vast majority are like you're describing. Yeah. Phil.
I one time saw on TV, I believe it was TV, so you know it's very likely true, that if you like pat yourself like this, you know, hey, you know, cool, that like your subconscious can't tell the difference between you and somebody else. I've done it before, and I, you know, okay, good. That calms me down a little bit.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, I guess it's kind of like what we were doing, but just the idea, you know, somebody come and go, hey, cool, you know?
Yeah, it's the same idea, totally. Yeah, and it's true. I mean, in terms of the chemicals release, the body doesn't really know the difference. That's what I've read as well. And that's what's in the research here, that chemical oxytocin is released through this soothing touch, whether it's a pat or a solid touch, I think doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is how we receive it. If we're receiving our own pats as friendly, then that oxytocin is released. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Thank you. I wanted to read you all a poem that is on this topic. It's called If You Would Grow by Daniel F. Mead. If you would grow to your best self, be patient, not demanding, accepting, not condemning, nurturing, not withholding, self-marveling, not belittling, gently guiding, not pushing and punishing. For you are more sensitive than you know. Humankind is as tough as war, yet delicate as flowers. We can endure agonies, but we open fully only to warmth and light. And our need to grow is as fragile as fragrance dispersed by storms of will. To return only when those storms are still. So accept, respect, and attend your sensitivity. A flower cannot be opened with a hammer. This is what we're learning and relearning and relearning coming out of this, you know, harsh culture. Jerome. Hi. Did you put up your hand, Jerome?
I did.
Oh, there you are. Great.
Yeah, I did. I when you talked about may I be kind to myself. Mm-hmm. There's one more line that I like to add.
Great.
Is it all right if I share that?
Oh, please.
May I accept myself just as I am.
Yes. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for this lovely talk.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for being here. Yes, and that's definitely one for the records, Jerome. May I accept myself just as I am. That's another like beautiful self-compassion phrase. And for some of us, it can feel like a North Star, like a direction we're walking rather than a lived reality. But even walking in that direction by invoking that wish is a really noble effort. It's really beautiful. Yeah. Okay, well, I'd like to end with a couple of songs. The very last song that I'll do will be our dedication of merit. But before that, this is just a really simple song and you can sing along. It's so easy to sing along to. It's called Sending You Light by Melanie DeMore, a fabulous Oakland singer-songwriter. And Sending You Light, she wrote it when a friend was dying for her friend. And it's just invoking this energy of compassion. And of course, compassion is a huge energy, and we can and do send it out to others, beings of all sorts, people and animals and beings. We do. And we can also, and this is the thing we're really talking about tonight, we really can send that compassion inward. We can be in one person. We can be both the giver and the receiver of compassion. And that's what we want to learn here, not to exclude ourselves from our circle of care, not to exclude ourselves from the golden rule, not to exclude ourselves from love. So this song is called Sending You Light. And as we sing, you can offer it in toward your own being and also outward to others. I am sending you light to heal you, to hold you. I am sending you light to hold you in love. I am sending you light to heal you, to hold you. I am sending you light to hold you in love. I am sending do one more song. This is the dedication of merit. This is the Pure Land, Buddhist Pure Land version of the Pure Land is one of the many different forms of Buddhism worldwide. This is their version of the dedication of merit. This is where we offer any good energy that we've generated in our circle tonight out for the benefit of all beings. So this is a Pure Land version put to music by Reverend Heng Shur, the abbot of the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery. And the music was written by Canadian singer-songwriter Lorena McKenna. So very much an interbeing kind of a piece offered to close our evening. May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may our minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave our grief and pain. May this boundless light meet the darkness of our sacred night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and wise. All right. If you'd like to unmute and say goodbye, please do. Thanks again for being here tonight. Wishing you all a good week.
Thank you, Eve. That was awesome.
Thank you, Eve.
Bye bye, everybody.
Lovely, lovely talk.
Thank you.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.